This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3312 for Tuesday, the 13th of April 2021. Today's show is entitled COVID Doldrums. It is hosted by Dave Morris and is about 71 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is MRX and Dave Morris have a chat over Mumble in these trying times.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Hacker Public Radio. Now, today is a chat between myself, who's Dave Morris, and Mr. X. Hi, Mr. X. How are you doing?
Hi, Dave. Doing fine. Thank you very much. It's very nice to catch up with you again after our first 33 minutes of trying to get Flaming Mumble to work. Apart from that,
Mumble seems to be a strange and wonderful beast. You know, you have to sort of make sacrifices to it or something to make it work. I don't know what you have to do, but yeah, we all fall down the nasty Mumble hole from time to time.
Yeah, it's strange because it seemed to be the order at which we connected, you know, or connecting, disconnecting. Sometimes I could hear Dave, sometimes I couldn't, and it was really bizarre. But the strange thing is, I tend to use Mumble on the tablet just because it's convenient, but for better quality, I'm using Mumble on the PC here, and the audio quality, this end, Dave's audio is really, really clear. So, I mean, I was telling Dave that I'm forced to use Skype for business on a regular basis, and I can say this is far better quality, you know.
Yeah, isn't that strange? Yeah, it's a great thing. Mumble is a wonderful thing. I don't think enough people know about it. But there you go. So we have been planning to do this since about, I don't know, last year. We last actually got together to talk on August the 23rd, according to my notes here, last year.
That was as far back as that.
Yeah. It doesn't feel that long, does it? But then time is a bit bizarre in this pandemic. But we'd been thinking of doing this before Christmas, and you know, and things.
Yeah.
It's just really hard to get coordinated to do these things. But
it is. And these, was it? What is that? What's that? One of the audio book clubs they were talking about that story. Was it Times as They Are or something? That was one of the sayings that the author had it. Times as They Are.
Yeah.
I keep finding myself saying that over and over. You know, because it is really, really bizarre. You know, the situation we're all in. You know,
yeah.
although the strange thing is that you know, had you been an expert in that field, you'd say, "Oh, well, I'm surprised it hasn't happened already." You know.
Yeah, I keep listening to podcasts where they suddenly pop up stuff about the plague in Roman times. What was it? The Justinian plague, which was a bubonic plague. But, you know, they were all, you know, they were talking about how they coped with it and how they dealt with it and all that sort of thing, you know. And not knowing what caused it made life a lot difficult. But, you know, still quite there.
Yeah.
Quite a thing.
Yeah, it's really strange. I think I've maybe mentioned this before, but I had a New Scientist article on my desk that I read. It was that bird flu outbreak that happened a number of years back, and it was like a double spread thing on the bird flu pandemic, and it was how to protect your family. In fact, and I've got it here because I had to bring it home. I had to empty, clear my desk out, so some of my desk stuff has been decanted and brought home that I think about it, and I just kept finding it and kept moving it from place to place because I thought one day this will come in handy, and of course it's now coming handy. Well, because one of the things they said was, you know, they said, you know, it might, how is it the word that, you know, there is some mileage to perhaps getting, should a pandemic happen, that there might be some mileage in getting the infection firsthand, as long as you survive it, because at least at that point there'll be health service available to deal with it. I thought that's an interesting outlook.
Yeah. Though yes, it doesn't quite apply to this COVID thing, though, does it?
No.
Because the side effects can be quite devastating in many cases. But
yeah,
you can see where that thinking's come from.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it was slightly tongue in cheek. But if it was really that bad, if the health service fell over completely, then you would be the lucky one who'd been seen in hospital first. You know, the first ones would be the lucky ones, really. You know, quite an interesting outlook of it. You know, I do remember that particular point, and I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. You know?
It used to be the case when I was a kid that if anybody got chicken pox, there was a tendency for parents to go and take the kids who hadn't had it yet around to visit them, so they would catch it as well. I'm sure.
Wow.
And because it's a fairly trivial disease, mostly, although it can turn into something really nasty if you get it in a strong form. And of course, you always get shingles as a consequence.
Right, right.
Well, not always, but there's a very, very strong chance that, you know, 50 years down the road, you're going to end up with shingles. So if you can avoid it, then so much the better.
I think that was there not things in the media about people having COVID parties and stuff so that they could catch it and get it out of the way, sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, I do remember this in a vague way. I don't think it ever happened to me that I was taken somewhere to, it's time to catch your chicken pox.
I don't
remember
that much.
Being talked about.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. So, yes. So we've made a list of all these things that we might want to talk about, haven't we? We've got to, in fact, we started with Christmas and New Year, or did I start? I think I started this one. No, there was an earlier one that we rejected because things had got out of date, I think, hadn't they? But we were just going to comment about Christmas.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I we had been trying to arrange this, and I had my own sort of wee notes sort of thing. And then when Dave sort of shared a note with myself, then of course, it allowed me to sort of be a bit more focused, and so I sort of kind of arranged mine in a similar sort of order sort of thing. So go ahead. How was Christmas and New Year for you then?
We don't make much of Christmas, to be honest. My son and his girlfriend disappear at Christmas because her parents are very, very, very keen Christmas celebrators. And so he always reckons, right, well, I better go and, you know, hang out with the family. And so he says to me, your dad's okay if I come in after Christmas. And she said, yes, fine, not a problem. So we usually have a get together on Boxing Day, 26th, if you don't know what Boxing Day is. I don't think it's not a name in America. But anyway, so that's what we did this year. Made an interesting meal, which turned out to be extraordinarily difficult to make with just me doing it.
I wouldn't even imagine doing that. I mean, I think I can manage beans and toast and stuff like that, you know, but I'm pretty rubbish, you know, the cooking, unfortunately.
The concept of it was great and easy, you know. If you ever get into cooking complicated things, the coordination of it all so that it all comes together at the right time is difficult, and it always throws me, I have to say. There was one time I did a family meal which was a series of curries, you know, it was a curry based meal, but I had about six dishes. And you had to start the first one the day before, and the second one, it took so many hours, and the third, you know. And so I wrote this complicated spreadsheet that showed a time order. So start this one at this point and put the thingy on the, you know, still got it. And I look at it and think, what on earth was I thinking?
Oh, that's incredible. Wow, yeah, that's amazing. It's funny, I can appreciate that, because, you know, when I put a frozen chicken thing in the oven and the chips have got to go at a higher temperature, you know, I bring it up to full temperature, put the chips in, then I put the chicken thing in, I drop the temperature down, and then the last 10 minutes bring it back up again, and then that way you get it all cooked evenly, not yes. soggy wet chips. And which I won't say who does that, but I have had meals like this, you know.
yes. That's where you need two ovens, isn't it?
This is it, yeah.
So I said to the guys, did you enjoy that? And they said, yeah. But I was incredibly late with it. And they said, tell you what, let's do it again. And we'll all join in and do it as a joint effort. You know, we'll each have a particular thing we're going to do. So New Year's Day, we did that. And that was a lot of fun, actually. It was great fun.
You know,
everybody had their own task. And we did trip over one another a little bit because my kitchen's not very big. But it was a lot more fun than just having the one person slaving over it all, you know. So that was actually quite a highlight. I mean, the content of the food was less than the fun of actually doing it together.
Well, because we have I always joke about our caravan kitchen, because it's pretty small as well, and we kind of been tipping up between each other. But it's good when you split up the tasks, and you know, when it comes to cooking, I'm quite happy to help out, but I need, let's say, a sense of direction. I'm rubbish at cooking on my own, but I think I also tend to be a bit too exact on things, you know. Just slap things together, you know.
Yes, there is definitely that. My kids laugh at me because I am a real stickler for cutting things up in nice, organized, regular fashion and stuff. You know, my carrots have to be sliced.
Yes, and
then
like that too.
Cut cubed. And, you know, it's almost as if I'm measuring with calipers to make sure they're all the same size. I've never reached that stage, but, you know, it just looks better if they're all the same.
Absolutely, I quite agree. Yeah. I know exactly where you're coming from.
But they laugh at me for doing this. So I try not to. Do too much of that type of thing.
it's very good. It's very good. Yeah, I think. Well, of course, it's very very rare now that we have things like, you know, frozen chicken and chips. Well, in fact, I think my wife tends to do it. She's got this recipe where it's potatoes and I can't tell you because I don't make them. So, but she got this recipe. It's potatoes with the skins, and you sprinkle. You obviously run them under water, and the secret is to dry them off on a towel, and then you sprinkle seasoning on it, and you cook it. I'm not sure how she cooks it. Is it the oven? I'm not sure. But the point is, part of it is that the seasoning makes it look like it's golden brown, but it maybe isn't. Mm-hmm. But it looks and tastes like a chip, and yet it's not got any oil in it, I don't think. So it's really healthy. And, you know, I mean, we eat a lot of, it's mostly vegetarian dishes that are made from scratch sort of thing. So our diet has, in the last year or so, you know, greatly improved. But to be fair, we haven't eaten a lot of frozen things and stuff for many years. I think prior to that, we did a lot of, what do you call them, crock pot type meals, you know.
Haven't done one of those for a long time, actually. But, I like to just come up with, get clues for new meals from YouTube or whatever, and having a little experiment with them, and then maybe do them as something for the family. Those are fun things to do.
Well, I was just saying to my wife today. I was saying, you know, I was explaining the likeness to recipes and open source software. I think it kind of went in one ear and out the other, so to speak. But you share it, because she was talking about the recipe she'd made that isn't quite like the one it was based on such and such, but she modified it. I said, well, that's what you do with software. And I went, oh, right, okay, glazed eyes.
I know. I've actually been watching, there was a time I used to go to the Far East fairly often, and I quite like Asian food. And I've been watching a series of cooking stuff from a Korean person who on YouTube, and they do sort of small quick meals and stuff. But one of them was how to make fried rice the easiest way. And the thing boiled down to the fact that if you take some pre-cooked rice and put it in a bowl, and then you break two or three eggs or something, depending on how many people you're serving, into it, and just mix the whole lot together, so you end up with this sort of eggy rice. Then you chuck that into a pan and cook it, and slowly, and then gradually the egg sets around the rice, and it would probably make somebody who makes fried rice as professionally absolutely horrified. But it actually works out quite well, and I made that for my daughter the other week, and she thought it was fantastic. She really enjoyed it, you know. So those sorts of things where you think, oh, I could adapt that and put this, that, and the other in, and end up with something that's nice, and it worked it for once.
That sounds really good. So what, you just wee bit oil and a wok of whatever it is, and just cut. I must say that to Mrs. X and see if she'll cook something like that up. or I even have a go myself, I suppose, if I'm made this. But, you know.
I like turning these things into written recipes because my memory is so awful. I can never remember what I did last time. So it's an early stage of recipe, but I'd be happy to share it if you're interested.
By all means, just either pop an email or whatever, you know. That'd be good.
So things like that are quite fun. So it's an interesting voyage, coming up with new ideas, or you know, finding a new idea and then working with it or developing it a bit, or that type of thing, you know. It's there's loads and loads of sources of information too, if you hunt around the internet.
My wife's always looking at various recipe things. I just can't quite get. I certainly enjoy eating them, you know, but I'm just not. I'm just not got the confidence. I think that's part of the reason as well. I think I'm going to make a mess of it, sort of thing. But you know, I don't know. It's just one of these things. I guess everyone's different, you know.
Yeah. It's. You need to be prepared for failures. I mean, sometimes things go completely wrong and it's horrible. Usually I make them for myself, and if it's really horrible, then, you know, I probably won't do it for the family. it's an interesting, quite a fun thing to do, I find.
So I suppose maybe we should we're kind of go off topic. We're talking about Christmas and New Year, aren't we? I suppose.
Yes. So tell me about your Christmas and New Year.
Well, it was quite quiet. I mean, we used to all get together and come to our house. You know, my mother and wife's mother and father and. But I think these days they tend to just, you know, my wife goes to her mother and father, and I go to my mother. Of course, my mother kind of lives on her own, so it's just, I suppose, speaking, you can bubble, and my brother, he normally comes up for Christmas, but obviously under these circumstances he didn't come up, but. I think usually my brother tends to help out with the cooking. Well, he's quite a dab hand at cooking, and I was a bit conscious that I didn't want to leave all that to my mother. And I did say, no, I could help out, and blah blah blah. She said, no, it's no bother at all. So to keep it really simple, I mean, so I'd be happy with beans and toast, doesn't mean anything fancy, but you know, she made a lovely traditional Christmas meal with turkey and stuff and all that sort of stuff. And the restaurant says that, you know, trifle loads of cream atop and marshmallows, of course, to die for, you know.
Well, that sounds great. Yeah, I've never made one of those. My mum used to make trifle all the time. I know the sort of basic principle of it. Never done it myself though. Might be something my lot would like.
Yeah, so I mean, so it was quite it felt like a bit of a frantic up to Christmas sort of thing, and then there was the release when we had the break, and it was because I was kind of working from home, nobody really took any holidays, so consequently there was a big release of holidays at the end of the year, And so I ended up, was it 3 or 4 weeks, something like that? It was a lot of days anyway. So it was really nice to get a chance to unwind and whatnot.
Yeah, that's really important. Yeah.
And in fact, you know, when I was doing the upgrades on my devices, which I was in the shows that I did, well, I mean, I think when I first did the first one, I felt I was still kind of a bit hyper from work and whatnot. So it took me a day or so to sort of calm down and sort of, you know. So that was good. And I was glad to get my distros up to date. But it's such a flaming nuisance, you know. It just takes so much time, you know. So that was that was good to get that out of the way. I was glad of that, really.
Yes. It made some good shows too. Some interesting problems you solved there.
Yeah, it was good. It was good fun. I'd like to get more chance to do a bit more back into use a computer, but I just time is so difficult. So getting the time nearly. So shall we move on to the next topic? And is that, I think we've got that titled Pandemic.
Yes. There's so much to say about this. I think it's probably. Yeah. I've gone on and on about this in various contexts, so I'll probably keep it fairly brief. I'm just, because of my age and the fact that I've got various illnesses, I've just been keeping low all the time, you know. But I did get my first vaccination very recently, in the beginning of February. It was 2nd of February. So I'm hoping for my second one before too long. About end of April, maybe that sort of time, I think. I haven't heard when yet, but I'm sure I'll get to know in due course. So it's nice, you know, from the point of view of, I'm probably less at risk now. So, you know, it's though I haven't really started changing what I'm doing very much. Well, we're still locked down, though, aren't we?
Yeah. It just seems things going to my head there when you say, I haven't changed yet. I'm thinking, you know, I had this image of, you know, like a werewolf looking for hairs in the back of your hands and as your fingernails grow, and we have to take it to the vaccine.
No, that hasn't happened. No. Well, it was I had the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine, which is built around a chimp virus. So definitely hairy backs of hands.
No,
it's just a cold virus that that chimps get that we it doesn't bother us, and the thing has been genetically engineered to produce the antigen that causes the immune system to get busy and protect you from the coronavirus. So
indeed. So, I think all of my immediate family, apart from me, have all had their vaccines. So it's just waiting on me getting my first one. So I don't think it'll be too long now. My sister-in-law, she got vaccinated I think last week.
Okay.
And she's slightly younger than myself, maybe a year or so. She's down in England, so you know, they've got different areas are doing different things, I guess. But I'm looking forward to. I guess I would imagine I might need to travel a little bit further, because it does seem like depending on your age, if you're you know above a certain age, then they try and keep it local to where you are. I mean, my mother had to go to she went to a GP, which obviously that's quite a good thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I think. Anybody over 80 was being vaccinated in the local health centre in Scotland. I think that was the
right
thing.
Right, okay.
But the 70 to 80 bracket all have to go to some central point to get those. So I went to the Edinburgh Conference Centre, which I'd never been in. Huge place. It's and really really well organised. It seemed to be. It's quite quite impressive. It's the way they did
it. Right. Very good. Yeah. I don't know. I just need to wait and see where I'm getting sent. I'll be glad to go wherever, you know. I'll feel a bit strange because obviously we're all staying very, very local at the moment, you know, because you can't go outside your region. So, that's the thing that I wasn't, I didn't know what would happen work wise, but I was a bit concerned about should I be called into work. To work in the office, basically, because I knew Christmas was coming up, and I was planning to obviously visit my mother over Christmas. And I know that wasn't recommended, but I was thinking, well, if I haven't been absolutely anywhere, and I haven't, I mean, I've not even been to the shops. We do kind of click and collect. It's a drop off service where you sort of, for people who don't know, you go to the shop and you open your boot and load the groceries and close it and drive off again. So you're not even going into the shop to do it, to pick up your groceries. It's all done online. So really not mixing with anybody at all indoors. So I figured that was pretty safe, you know.
Yes, that sounds like it. I mean, it's good to have recommended ways of behaving so that you don't accidentally go and do something that's dangerous. But once you've got the general principles of this thing, then I think you can use your own knowledge and understanding to know how to behave.
I mean, I always think that rules are there to stop stupid people doing stupid things. You know, it's it can't cover all eventualities. You might be following the rules but doing something actually quite risky, and likewise you might not be following the rules but it's pretty safe.
I think that sounds reasonable. We certainly the early stages, that because my kids don't live with me, we were keeping apart, you know, just sort of talking to one another on the phone or on Telegram or something like that, and not actually meeting up. But then we stopped and had to think about it and thought, I think we can. And there was all this talk about bubbles at that point. You know, as long as you're careful about what the likelihood of infection the people you're associating with is. And
this is it. I mean, it depends what the people you're associating with. I mean, if they're meeting lots of members of the public, then obviously that's slightly more risky sort of thing. But if they're not meeting very many people either, so then this is it.
Yeah. Well, both of my children are, one's still working on his MSc in computer science, but it's all remote, so he's not going anywhere. My daughter finished her MSc and she's job hunting at the moment. And of course, that's all remote as well. So interviews are conducted over Zoom and that type of stuff, you know. So
we're
going anywhere. And my son's girlfriend's a doctor. Well, she's about to be, to get a full doctor's license or whatever you get sometime this year. The working at a medical center, they're so careful, amazingly careful. No, so the likelihood of being exposed to anything there is very, very low indeed, I think.
Yeah, this is it. That sounds very sensible indeed. So, yeah, that's good, excellent. You've got to draw the line somewhere. I mean, you need to still live, you know. So, yeah, it sounds very sensible.
Yeah. The second jab thing. I see your notes here about the second jab is the one you need before you can be sure that you've got the full effect of the vaccine.
Right.
But in some cases, some people get a really strong response from it and end up feeling quite ill for a couple of days. But it seems to vary hugely with person and vaccine, I think, to some extent as well.
I was watching a Horizon program just the other day with my mum, because I let the button go there. So I was at my mother's and she was watching. She says, "Oh, I kept this for you. It was a Horizon things we know about COVID." And so they say the couple of things that stood out to me was, so they didn't know how long the vaccine protects against virus spreading, but it's likely to protect against serious illness for a good long time, longer than they maybe even think.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said something about the 12 weeks between the jabs, which they're doing in the UK, because at first they didn't know whether that was really, the hunch was, I think that's the way the UK seems to have played things, you know, it's on the balance of probability, we think this is likely to be the case. We don't know for definite, but we'll take the risk and whereas other countries have said, well, you know, until we get the evidence, we're not doing X, Y, and Z. We've been lucky and these things have panned out the way we expected, you know. But they were saying that the second jab, this is, you'll know maybe more about this than me, but my understanding was the second jab doesn't provoke a stronger response. It's that the first jab, it produces a good response and poor responses, but by waiting 12 weeks for the second jab, the poor responses die away and you only get the good responses, which gives you a better protection or something to that effect anyway.
Yeah, I saw some discussion about this specifically with the AstraZeneca vaccine, which has had further testing since it first became available. And the tests seem to be indicating that the level of response in terms of the likelihood of infection is, it ramps up from the first one, you know, I think it's something like 22 plus days, starts to climb up into the sort of 70%, what do they call it, efficacy, which is an odd word, but I think it means that you quite a high level of protection. And then if you get the second one and there's a good long wait for your immune system to sort of consolidate what it's learned about these proteins and stuff that's been injected with, then you get a really good up to 84% response with the second one. So it's both the second one and the delay seem to improve it. So that's essentially what you were saying, I think, wasn't it? I think it's a little bit of serendipity there, that I think the reason the gap was added was because they weren't sure about the supply. So they were trying to make sure they didn't use up all of the supply on the second dose. But I think in fact it's turned out to be quite a good strategy.
Yes, for all the mistakes that have been made, I think we've been quite lucky with a number of outcomes. But it's interesting because I said here that I think the UK has got among the worst death rate in Europe, sort of thing, around about, I think.
Yeah.
So they're sitting over 100,000 deaths. And it was interesting, I was reading a book, it's a kind of body book, and I actually got it from my mother-in-law, and it's on my Kindle. And it's been going through all the different aspects of the human body and whatnot. It's quite fascinating. I wasn't sure when I got it, because how much I'd enjoy it, but you can pick it up and put it down. So I think I'm not a big reader anyway. And I talked about all sorts of things, and they got on about pandemics and whatnot. And I see this was written in 2017, I think, so it wouldn't know anything about what's going on just now. But they were also going on about, I think, was it between 2017 and 2010, I can't remember if it was around that time period, but anyway, they were talking about how they reckon that the Britain is among the least amount of money on healthcare, although we actually get quite good outcomes considering all of that. You know, we're getting damn good value for money, but I think they reckon that the cuts that had come in between, I think it was 2010 or 2007 and 2017 or whatever, they reckon that I contributed to possibly up to 120,000 premature deaths. So so it's just crazy. And it's not like, well, I could go on and on about this, but I maybe better stop here, I think.
It's I think one of the lessons to learn is that politicians running pandemic responses are not always the best.
No,
indeed, solutions. The ones that don't listen to the epidemiologists who predict these sorts of things quite accurately are definitely.
Well, as you'll know, people in the UK will have heard, what's it said? You know, somebody said recently, was it? Well, I mean, I won't quote. Was it? It might be was it not? Something about not listening to experts. It's, we're fed up listening to experts. I can't remember the exact quote, but there was some quote about, you know, we're fed up listening to experts, I think, or something to that effect. Well, that's why you make a mess of it if you do that, you know.
Yeah. It's a ridiculous thing to say. I mean, I got terrible toothache, so I'll just go and see a plumber. It's makes no sense at all, because that's
no.
I don't know. But yes, it's a subject we should maybe walk away from them.
I think so. I was just going to say that from a personal point of view, I think it seems to be getting, I feel it more, a bit more difficult to coping with the lockdown. I find it quite easy for a good long while, but I'm finding it a bit more difficult now. I haven't been into work since, I think it was last November, something like that. And home working, I find that quite stressful. I think that everybody I seem to speak to, not just from my own company, but other places as well, that things are starting to go wrong. I remember when they started talking about this, they were asking, you know, they were all very conscious of your mental health and all that, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But, the thing was that after a number of months went by, it was all kind of forgotten about. And, it's at later stages, it starts to creep in, the difficulties. And on top of that, because my work people are a lot of people are retiring, and I'm having to take on more responsibility, and it's quite stressful. And then of course you're living on top of one another, and the house is getting all cluttered. You've got stuff lying all over the place, and you tend to find it. And at the beginning of the morning, by the time the day's over, you've got plates and dishes lying everywhere. You've got things strewn all over the place. It's just a nightmare, you know.
Oh yes. I know that feeling well. Yeah, I know. It's I was talking to my daughter about this recently, and she, I think we both agreed that somehow we seem to have lost motivation. It was really hard to generate enthusiasm for things. Yeah. I think it's partly because you're just in the same environment doing pretty similar things a lot of the time, and you really need to get out of it for a while and do something different somewhere, in a different place if possible, you know. So it's I think that's part of it. In fact, she and I have been going for walks two times a week at the moment, but maybe we're aiming for three, just to go out for a bit, just in the locality, we can chat as we go. And it's nice enough to go and have a little bit of a walk by yourself, but if you're walking with somebody, it makes it a lot more fun, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
So that I think that might be helping both of us to do that. So. Yeah.
I mean, I obviously having a furry companion, we do go walks quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But my mother obviously serves on her own, but I think she goes out maybe not every day, but most days for a walk, and it must be harder for her. But I do visit her a number of times during the week, which I'm sure that must help. But there's other advantages. I've got written down here that I was glad that I didn't need to drive during all the bad weather, because we had some horrendous weather, didn't we?
We had some pretty grim, snowy weather. Yeah, I know. I was very glad not to have to drive in that as well.
That was an advantage. I actually, it just felt like every time you're trying to clear the path, just more stuff came in. It's funny, I was looking on YouTube, there was a chap from Canada, and they call it a snow shovel, a snow blower type thing. It's like a lawnmower for snow, you know. And it's and you can get battery powered now, so you just whick it up your drive and just chucks it over the side. I thought, that's a great idea.
I know. I have a problem with mine, actually, because the way the houses are built around here, they're fairly close together. This is a standard sort of British estate. Some houses are detached, as they call them, but some are semi-detached, where there's sort of two houses stuck together with a communal wall. They're pretty well packed together. And I've got a driveway that is moderately long, and it goes in between the two houses for half of its length down to my garage.
Yes.
So when it's full of snow, there's no way to put the snow. You know, when it's light, you can shovel a line across it and put that pile of the snow you've moved in front of you and then go further again and do the same. But gradually the pile builds up until it's massive. But usually I try, if there's not too much snow, get that to a point where I can then move it to the right where my front garden is. I just chuck it on there. But right. we had, I don't know, about as much as 6 inches of snow at one point. Certainly a lot of snow.
Yeah, it must have been something like that. Yeah, you know? And bearing in mind, I mean, I'm out in the sticks. You're in the middle of, you know, you're in Edinburgh area sort of thing. So mm-hmm. it's going to be, it's usually, you know, a bit worse out this way. So it was quite bad.
Mm-hmm. I'm up a hill, which I think might right. make it a little bit worse. Not very much up a hill, but sort of part way up the Pentlands Hills. And so, you know, I think it can be a little bit more snowy here.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know, whatever. But I was thinking it would be great if I had a sort of small wheelbarrow or something. I'd fill that up and then move it, the snow to the front. But a snow blower wouldn't do me a huge lot of good unless you make it blow forwards and then go into the snow you've just blown in order to move it.
We've got a good long driveway as well, and there's bushes either side. And there's like a fence and then bushes, and so it probably wouldn't blow high enough to get onto the bushes and would just fall back down again. So it probably wouldn't work for me either, and there wouldn't be enough room to get it past the cars. So yeah, I mean, if you're you know, living in Canada and you've got to deal with this sort of thing all the time, then it maybe is a good thing. But I think I got myself a number of years back, it wasn't that many years ago, a snow shovel, you know, the kind of flat plastic mm-hmm, thing. Mm-hmm, and they're great. They're so much better than a normal shovel, you know.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I've got three of these things. I've been trying different models over the years. You know, there's this sort of one which is just a sort of plastic flat thing, as you say. And that's fine. But if you get a lot, if the snow's heavy and wet, and you get a lot on that, it's really hard to control because it doesn't have a handle at the end. It's just a pole.
That's what I've got. That's my complaint on that one. And of course, actually, end up hurting my wrist because I've got bad wrists anyway, mm-hmm. partly to do with RSI and stuff. So that can cause me an issue, I must admit.
I've got a shovel that was sort of sold as a snow shovel or as something for clearing out of stables or something, so you'd scoop up all the straw and that type of stuff with it. That's okay. You can certainly get more, and it's got a proper D-shaped handle at the end, you know, so you can control it a bit better. But it doesn't scoop as deeply. And of course, they're plastic, and they don't last all that well.
Yeah, I can remember last time there was really heavy snow, and there was a while ago where these snow shovels were in very short supply because everybody wanted one, you know, and I can't remember, but for some reason we got one just before it all kicked off, and we felt so lucky, you know, I mean, they were completely sold out of every shop, you know, across the land. We've had this for a number of years, and I'm amazed it hasn't got cracked or broken, but it's been all right. So it does a job, which is the main thing.
Yeah. I've often thought it would be nice if you could get one made of a thin sheet steel or something, you know, I saw a stainless steel sink in a skip layer recently, and I was thinking, ooh, I could probably saw that in half and make a shovel out of it.
Oh yes.
I didn't do it. Just thinking something like that, you know, take off all the extraneous bits of metal and put that on a handle, and that could be quite good actually.
Well, when we were on holiday, I was in one of these sort of wee local shops, Ardmongery place, and they had these like mini snow shovels that supposedly fold up to use in your car.
Oh yeah.
And I thought, oh, that'll be handy. So I got it, and I've got it in my car. Well, actually, I think now it's actually in the whole cupboard, but it's got this nut thing where you release it and it telescopes open, but it telescopes open by about 2 inches, so it's not worth the bother. You know, it's a complete joke.
yeah. It would be nice to find the ideal thing for doing this sort of stuff.
I was just going to say that just, you know, talking about changing subject slightly, but about staying positive and all that. And my wife, she read this thing about, suggesting that you come up with three things at the end of the day, sort of thing, end of each day, three things that you think you were three highlights, or maybe things you're grateful for, or something like that. And I've been trying to do that. And I think that probably does tend to help, lift your mood a wee bit,
That is quite good. I've actually tried to make a sort of to-do list type of thing every day, and then work through as much of it as I can. You know, being realistic about it, you don't have 20 things on your to-do list. But there was an HPR show a few weeks ago by Jeroen from the Netherlands. He was talking about a thing called Task Warrior, which is
I like that. You know, I did like that.
Yeah. It's I actually a couple of months ago, actually, now I think. But anyway, I'd used Task Warrior back in the day, and I just couldn't get on with it very well. Because anyway, I think it was me rather than Task Warrior, usually is. But I thought, I'm going to have a go at this again, see if I can use it properly, you know. So I have been, and I've been getting it to you can put stuff in like, you know, whatever. I can't think of anything offhand, but you know, you put in tasks that are recurrent ones, and it doesn't alert you, but if you go and ask it what's on today, it will show you where you're supposed to have this one finished today, Well, this one's overdue, get it sorted, and it pops up the recurrent stuff. And I just find that the process of going through that and thinking, oh yeah, I said I was gonna wash the floor or whatever it was today, and I haven't done it yet. And now I've done it now. Yes, so I can go to that and say task 42 done, and that makes me feel really good, you know. I think it's similar sort of psychology is really what I mean.
I used to have a paper based. I've had too many things on the go, then I would write it down. You can fold a sheet of paper into, I can't remember, it's eight pieces, and you end up with a square, and you put it in your pocket, and you can keep that bit of paper till it almost disintegrates, you know, because you can fold. If you've got eight, I can't remember if it's eight or I can't remember how many bits it's folded into, but I saw it on a YouTube life hack or something like that, and I found that quite useful, and just ad hoc. And see, my problem with that Task Warrior, I thought, that's really good, and it does sound really powerful, and the way that I think it can do like natural language, it's things you can say to it, and it works out the context of what you're saying, sort of thing. It sounded very clever, and the idea of just working on the terminal sounded good. I really liked the idea of that, but the trouble is having access to something to type it in with, you know. I mean, I've got tablets, which are always on, but my PC, well, it's not in use during the week. It's all disconnected, so I couldn't do that. I don't have a laptop. I've got a wee old Samsung thing, which takes too long to boot up. You know, this is my problem. It's having access to it. That's the downside. If I had if I had some sort of clamshell thing that I could open and it would just be there, then it would be useful. And I think that's why I like my sign was always to hand, and I did try to get used to using the Google Calendar, and I just couldn't get, you know, just trying to frustrate and I just couldn't get on with that at all. Basically, that's what I'm building to.
Yeah, you're quite right. Of course, I have a PC on my desktop here, the one I'm using right now, which gets switched on in the morning and stays running until I go to bed at night. So, and I'm mostly in the house, you know, so I can easily go to that and ask the Task Warrior what's going on and what I need to do and stuff. But that's a pretty unusual and unworkable model for many people, I'm sure. But I think Task Warrior has got a server-based thing, which I saw some reference to, but haven't delved into yet. So I don't know whether you could be running on a Raspberry Pi and connect to it from your phone or something.
Yeah, of course, that ties in breaking the order in which we're talking about things. But you know, I was talking about laptops and netbooks and such like, and my Samsung netbook is really getting a bit long in the tooth, and I've got this I've got this voucher thing that I've got to spend, and it expires. Maybe I can't remember, middle of the year, something like that. And I'm not quite sure what to spend on. It's a nice thing. It's a long service award type thing. And I don't quite know what used to get a carriage clock or something like that. But anyway, this voucher, I don't want to spend it on. And I was toying with the idea of a Chromebook. And of course, the beauty of that is you open it up and it would just be there and live. So you could do something like that. But I don't like the idea for all the things you're talking about. I was actually listening to your last show about the monthly thing. And you were talking to Ken about the built-in obsolescence and all that. And yeah. I mean, I agree with all that. And the number of times I use a laptop, I don't need it to be instantly on, well, apart from this thing you're talking about just now. And I was thinking that, you know, I think bad, that does sound quite good as well. So I'm just not quite sure what to do.
No, it's difficult, isn't it? It's difficult. Yeah, I looked at Chromebooks in the early days when they first came out, and a lot of people were just putting Linux on them. But then I think they probably got less amenable to being usable Linux things. There's probably people who would disagree with that statement, but they didn't appeal much to me, I have to say. But then I'm not a great laptop user. I do have a laptop, and it gets used, you know, once a month maybe, but it's not constantly in use.
Yeah, well, I think the Chromebooks now are a bit different beasts now than what they used to be. I've got a very early, well, an early-ish Chromebook that's now out of date now. My mother, I got second hand myself, and I actually gave it to my mother, but it's now since gone out of date. But I think now, as you'll know, they can run Android apps, and they can also run Linux apps as well, and I've got this in Linux mode. So that did appeal to me. But it's funny, I was looking, I thought, well, I wonder what, because you said to me about a ThinkPad, and I couldn't remember if you recommended the 240 or the 420. So I thought, I wonder what model my mother's got. So I walked down to see her today, and she's got a T62, which is my second-hand cast-off. And I said to the, she's got one of these speaker things. So the speaker thing, which I won't say the name of because my tablet might go daft if I do, but I said, hey, you know what? when was the T62 manufactured or something like that? And I said, oh, it was manufactured in 2007. And, oh, right, okay. So it's getting on about 2007. And I said, okay, when was the T240 manufactured? And it said, 1999. I thought, oh, it can't be that one, because that's even older than my mother's. So that can't have been what more Dave was talking about. It must have been the 420. So I asked it, you know, when was the T420 manufactured? And he said, I don't understand that. And I tried again, and I tried all different ways. I don't understand that. So I had to get the tablet out and have a look. And it was 2011, I think, actually.
Yeah, I don't really know much about them, to be honest with you. The reason I mentioned them was because both my kids and my son's girlfriend had both gone down that road, you know, because there were some really good deals available on eBay a year or so back.
Yeah.
And they got, I mean, my daughter's machine is absolutely brilliant for what she needs, you know. It's small, it's a laptop, so it's bound to be portable. Two batteries, it's well powerful enough for her needs, and I don't know what it was, though. I don't know precisely what model it is, and there were lots of them available. There probably still are lots of them available from businesses who've bought them and then they need to replace them after a certain period of time, and that they become cheaply available on eBay.
I think that I don't know anything about any of these ThinkPads. I mean, as I say, years ago I bought myself a T62, which I gave to my mother, and I mean, you know, it's 13 years old anyway now, and when I got it, there's a little bit of play on the hinge, and it was like that from day one. even though the hinge is lovely and stiff and tight, and it still is, I don't know if where the hinge attaches to the chassis is a tiny bit loose, but it's got no looser. It's built like a rock, you know, everything just works perfectly on the thing.
Yeah.
But it's now getting very slow, considering, not because she runs Ubuntu in it, and obviously Ubuntu's getting fatter and fatter all the time, so it does take a while to boot up, and it's a wee bit slow. So I just wondered, I mean, the T420, I think there was ones now they may have been on eBay, you know, so many days to go, so maybe that wasn't the final price, but I think there was like £80, £90. Mm-hmm. But there may be a lot more than that if you let them go to the final countdown time sort of thing. So I don't know what they would cost. But yeah, I mean, I do like the idea of a ThinkPad, I must admit. So I'm just torn what to do. So that still gives me this problem. What do I spend my... I've got a £400 voucher. It's a nice problem to have, I must admit. But I don't know what to spend it on.
Yeah. Those sorts of decisions can be a lot more difficult. I've always found I'm not very good at coming up with a solution to that type of thing, I'm afraid.
Yeah. So I don't know. Following on with it, we're kind of jumping all over the thing, but following on from the technology things, I got myself, and again, I feel slightly guilty for buying it. I try not to buy stuff, you know, but I mean, we all get kind of hooked into the buying new things, you know. So I got myself an electric hand warmer, would you believe? Oh, and that's coming very handy, I can tell you.
Well, yes, I saw that. The only ones I've ever seen, my daughter was doing the Duke of Edinburgh Award a few years ago. She got up to the final level. In case anybody doesn't know, the Duke of Edinburgh Award is a sort of young person's challenge thing where you get to different levels of award. There's a bronze, a silver, and a gold one, I think, and you have to do various challenges, including a lot of things like orienteering. She did a, with the group she was with, she did a walk from Ullapool in the north of Scotland across to the opposite coast on the east. I'm not sure what area it was. So, you know, long walk, camping, etc., etc. And she had some of these hand warmers that you put in hot water and heat them up, and then you click a thing inside them and it releases the heat. Yeah, so she found that very useful for herself.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've got kind of bad circulation in my hands anyway, and I've had all kinds of hand warmers. I think I've given one of these ones that you heat up in the boiling water, but for me, they don't tend to last long enough. And I didn't think that's what you were going to say. I've also got, the one I thought you were going to talk about was the one where you it's a sachet and you take it out of the bag, and when air reaches it activates itself. And I think people tend to use them up mountainsides and stuff. They're like for serious hill walkers, but they last, you know, nearly the whole day or many hours. And I think my brother gave me a pack, which I would never buy myself because it's a thing that feels a bit wasteful. It's a one-off and you chuck it away. But it's to my mind, it lasts far too long for me. I'm not a serious hill walker. I'm not going to be up the mountains for 10 hours. You know, that wasn't any good. And I've got the best thing I came across was the Zippo lighter hand warmer, that's very good. But it's getting it going, it's getting the wick. It's got a catalytic converter type thing in it. Sometimes you think you've got it lit and it's not, and then sometimes it's lit and you bump it and the top came off and moved the wick and it cut out. So, but generally speaking, it's pretty good, and it could last. You can pour as much lighter fluid in it or hand warmer fluid as you like, and it could last all day if required. So it's very, very good. But it's a hassle of, you know, igniting it and you know, pouring stuff in, fiddling about with it. If you're just going to go for a walk, it's a lot of hassle. Whereas with the electric hand warmer, click on, click off, and that's it. Nice and handy that way.
Yes. I think the one my daughter had was just a sort of emergency thing, like you had to take one of those or pair of those, and you had to take a bivy bag well. Those types of things were sort of standard issue for these types of expeditions. So it was really, really And it wasn't even the winter, I think, that she did the did her last last walk.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, I don't know. It's rated at 10,000 milliamp hours. You can also charge your phone with it and whatnot. But I do wonder how long it's going to last. And it tells you, you know, don't leave it too long without use or shorten the life of the battery. I don't kind of know that anyway. Particularly, I knew about not leaving it at 100%. You know, I guess these LiPo batteries are best, although it didn't say in the manual, but, you know, leave it about 50% charge if you're going to leave it any length of time. They just say don't leave it any length of time at all. So time will tell whether how long it lasts. But I've got one of these USB, it's like a wee digital display, and it logs how many milliamp hours charge it takes. And I think it topped out, maybe something like 8,000 milliamp hours. So you never get the full capacity from these things. So it's not too bad, you know, considering the size of it. But it's pretty impressive. That's like 8 amps for 1 hour. I mean, that's just astounding, you know. It's just the capacity of these things. It's like a hand grenade now, you know.
Yes. These lithium-ion battery things are amazing. I've got several of them. In fact, I was thinking of doing a Raspberry Pi project where I wanted to do, set up a camera outside and run it with one of the smaller ones of those. You could get them from Lidl for just a few pounds, you know. I can't remember what the rating was, but it should have been enough to run a small Raspberry Pi for several days at least. So,
And you know, you said you've got a new Pi thingy. I can't remember what you called it now. What was the Pi thing you've got with the headers that don't match?
I've got a Raspberry Pi Pico, which is a different. It's not a Raspberry Pi at all. It just comes from the Raspberry Pi Foundation.
Ah, right.
So it's a microcontroller. It's like a Arduino in terms of its functionality.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it is compatible with the Arduino IDE thing that you can use to program it. I haven't actually used it yet. I was struggling to get the headers on straight.
Right.
I thought I got them on really dead straight, and then I tried to put the thing into a breadboard, and it wouldn't. It was really hard.
Oh, yes. That's going to be pretty accurate enough. Yes, I can understand that.
I didn't have a breadboard to hand when I was putting the headers on, which was a big mistake. So I'm going to have to resolder them. I think I'll probably put them lightly into a breadboard and then heat the whole side and then sort of realign it, hopefully.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, that sounds excellent. Good stuff.
There's not a lot to say about it at the moment, but yeah, you should check it out if you're interested.
All right, you got plans to do something with it, sort of thing.
Yeah. I've got actually bought an accessory for the Pico, which is a little keyboard with LEDs behind it, so a 16x16 keypad thing, and you can plug a Pico into it and get a USB keyboard. I rather fancied the idea of having a USB keyboard plugged into my PC, so I think you can set it up so it will generate key sequences, or so you can make it send a whole bunch of keystrokes to run a program or something like that, or turn the sound up or down or something like that. That was my thinking.
All right. Very good. Aye. It's it's limited by your own imagination, I guess, really.
Yeah, I think so. I don't have a lot of imagination, but I need to learn how to do this sort of stuff, I think. So it's an interesting microcontroller. It's got two cores in it, and there's all sorts of talk about running the two in parallel in interesting ways, which sounds quite fun. I'd quite like to get into that. I've not really done that sort of stuff for a long, long time. So
very good. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's finding the time. I find and as you say, I said as well, the motivation. It's funny, but I can't remember if I heard you say or somebody said recently that they had this. The conclusion was that Linux use had dropped by 50% or something like that during the pandemic. Now, I don't know where I heard that figure from. But, you know, certainly from my point of view, I could definitely agree to that, you know, because, as I say, I can't get near my PC, and when I do, I can't really be bothered.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have any direct experience, so it's hard to judge. The people I know are using Linux a lot, I think, and I do, of course, but my family are not interested in. Well, it's not strictly true. My family don't do much Linux, but my son's MSc course requires him to do a fair bit. So he's actually got into Linux quite a lot. You know, in his course, his course is covering artificial intelligence and that type of stuff. So
all right, wow, so, fascinating. So
yeah. The university has virtual servers available for the students, so, and they're all running Ubuntu. He asked me for a little bit of advice in the first few weeks, and then he was way ahead of me, so that's fine.
Yeah, this is it. Yeah, very good. Yeah, funny, I remember you were saying to Ken about, was it the Mars rover using FFmpeg? Was that what you said?
That was what Ken said. Yeah. That's really cool. I didn't even know that. That's really amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I was telling Mrs. X about that, and I said, oh yeah, and I said, because I use that to sometimes to do process video as well. And of course, it was like, oh yes, yes, glazed eyes again. You know,
yes. Actually, now I think of it, my daughter's looking to get a job in science communication. That's what her MSc was in, and she's jobs are not easy to get these days. But
no,
science communication is a booming area, and she's saying, oh, do you know, I think I need to get into computer programming. And I'm going, ooh, because she's not wanted to, she's not needed to get that involved. So I don't know whether she's going to be asking me for advice on Linux and that type of stuff. Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows? I'm trying to remember the language that you it's not, wasn't Orc, what was that language that you're keen on, the
scripting language I use,
yeah, scripting, like, yes,
most often is probably Perl.
Perl, that's it. I'd imagine she wouldn't find too much use for Perl, obviously.
I doubt that very much. In her degree in biology, the students all really needed to learn quite a lot of R, which is a package for doing statistics. But there's a moderate amount of programming at the level of bringing together bits of the R package in order to make, you know, do statistical work.
Right.
Thing to read the data, a thing to reformat the data, to generate statistical methods and that sort of stuff. So she knows her way around this type of stuff. But
very good. So I don't know how much more you want to carry on with us.
list is ridiculously long. We're an hour and 10 minutes according to me into this.
Is it? Wow.
Hopefully it'll trim down a little bit,
I'm happy to carry on.
It might be better if we were to wind things down now.
We could always
trim back the list of stuff and chat again in the not too distant future.
And of course, Ken would like that, because I'll get two shows for the price of one sort of thing. Yeah,
absolutely. So. These are important factors.
Well, the thing is, as I say, you're finding it, I don't know, I'm finding it a struggle to pull shows together. I must admit, I've got one, I'm completely out of shows, because I usually have some shows to send in if the queue gets a bit low sort of thing. But I've no spare shows at all, although I'm working on one, which I hope to get pulled together this weekend, but we'll see. So this is, so yeah, we'll see anyway. But yeah, that sounds ideal.
Yeah, I'm having similar problems with shows, I should say. I used to be able to produce, you know, about one a month or something, because I just still do have a long list of things I'd quite like to do and ideas for series and that sort of stuff. But I cannot bring myself to get on with this at the moment. It's really hard.
Yeah.
I am working on a final show on the said stream editor thingy.
Oh, that'd be good.
A show six. And I said when I thought I was finishing the five shows, that I would try and bring the notes together and make a wee booklet out of it. And I'm sort of about 90% of the way through that. So I'm hoping to produce an EPUB or a PDF or something, or both.
That's just what I was going to ask, because I wonder what format you'll do it in. Yeah, that would be excellent, actually. Yeah.
Well, it would be nice if there was an index, and it would be nice if you could easily find stuff. That's one of the... I forget a lot of this stuff. You know, I go looking back at my notes, and it's a bit of a struggle to find stuff. So putting it into a form where you can find things more easily, I think, would be quite a valuable thing. So
I've not got any shares in any of these sort of things, but the book series that I... Oh, sorry. My mouse fell off the push-to-talk button.
Oops.
I forgot that if my mouse falls, there's a kind of square and it says push to talk. And if your mouse slides off it, it unkeys. So, So I was just going to say that I've got pocketbooks and whatnot. And I was so impressed with the first one that I bought more. I don't have any shares or any, you know, link to any of these. But my very first one was Linux Pocketbook by O'Reilly, you know, and that's great for... Now, I mean, it's just it gives you, you know, all the sort of common text processing type, well, and Linux commands and whatnot, and it's really small and concise. And then after I got that, I thought, well, that's quite handy. So I've got other ones. I've got one for grep, I've got one for bash, I've got one for Python, I've got one for sed and awk. The sed and awk one's tiny. It's how many pages is that now? Oh, it's, I don't know, 35, 40 pages, something like that. So they're really good and great references. I'd highly recommend those, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good thing to have. I've got a lot of post-its around the place, which reminds me of strange things I have to type in Vim, because that's my favorite editor. If I want to do things like enclose the current paragraph in such and such as... And in many cases, they're hacks that I've made myself, but I can never remember how to use them, you know.
Very good means
of easy access to a crib sheet for this type of stuff would be very desirable.
But, I look forward to seeing that when it gets pulled together. That'll be excellent. I do really enjoy it. I mean, the thing is, it's one of these things where it's probably good to be able to try it along with it. I very rarely get the chance to do that. But even just listening, it's surprising. I can remember things I've read in the books and say, oh yeah, I remember that, or I didn't know that. So I still get valuable information and find it really interesting to listen to while I'm doing dishes or whatever, you know.
Good. Yes. So we will get back to doing shows at some point, but it's been a bit of a struggle. But thank goodness a lot of people are coming, stepping up to the plate and sending stuff in. So
we've got to do what we can, I suppose, and just you know, it's just in these what do they call it, what was the phrase again? In these times,
troubling times.
That's it. Yeah.
Very good. All right then, let's call a halt at this point. That's been really good. Thank you very much for joining in and having the chat and all that sort of stuff.
Likewise, and I hope it's good fun, and we'll obviously pencil in one for later on, I suppose, at some point. So the best for now then.
All right then, see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye then. Bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.